Hi, everybody. Steve Savitsky. Welcome back to Savitsky Talks. And today we have Rabbanit Henkin, who's the founder and dean of Nishmat, a school in Israel, advanced Torah study for women. And thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Okay. So, you know, I'm doing a series about the future role of women in Orthodox Jewish life. And I'm thinking about, of all things, a great advertisement they used to have years ago for cigarettes for Virginia Slims, when they used to say, "You've come a long way, baby." Let's take out the word baby. But the point is, you know, I guess when we really look at the role of women in Orthodox Jewish life, they've really come a long way, haven't they?
It's remarkable in no time. If I look back 30 years, you didn't have women studying Gemara. You certainly did not, even 20 years ago, have women studying higher halacha. And now, thank God, we have a generation of halachically literate, of Talmudically literate women who are poised to make a tremendous contribution to Jewish life. So,
yeah,
yes, this has occurred almost overnight.
And so, you know, it's interesting because so many times things become overnight sensations, but they've really been brewing for a long time. So what are the factors that led up to this overnight, you know, tremendous revelation and success?
Well, I think in Jewish life throughout the generations, there's been a kind of a dialogue between Jewish society and the larger world around it, wherever Jews were located. And from the middle of the 20th century, you began to have changes in women's role in Jewish life, in the general community. Women began, I would say starting from the 70s, to reach for higher degrees and graduate degrees. Doctorates became more normative within the larger community. We began seeing women who were physicians, women who were lawyers, women who were taking part in politics. And, of course, within the Jewish world, those individuals who were finding a dissonance between their secular lives and their religious lives began raising questions. I think that that's where the push towards women's learning came from, that you had women getting advanced academic degrees, and they said, religion is at the epicenter of our lives. This is what it's about. And we don't want to have a dissonance between a high degree of secular education and Jewish education that's in its diapers while we're out there getting degrees in microbiology. So that's how I think it got started.
Mm-hmm.
And there are also other issues, status issues, that were generated by the fact that women found themselves participating in a discussion in the boardroom and began asking themselves questions about synagogue participation and communal roles.
So it was really a natural outgrowth of society as women became, you know, CEOs of corporations, physicians, attorneys, and so on. It was only natural that they should then assume perhaps some different role in Orthodox Jewish life than they had before.
If you care about Jewish life and you discover that you have a skill set through which you can contribute, it's only natural that you're going to say, well, I wish to make a contribution in my shul. I wish to make a contribution in my community. So I think that this is something which is so exciting and so positive and really represents at its core the allegiance of women to Judaism and to Jewish life.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think is, that's a two-part question. What do you think is still left that, you know, has not been, you know, uncharted waters, one? And two, looking at the more, let's say, Haredi type of world, how are they dealing with this, or are they not dealing with this?
Uncharted waters and the Haredi world. Listen, life is made up of changes, of a changing environment. We're constantly finding changes, and we're living in a pace of accelerated change as a result of the flow of information that, you know, starting in the 90s, became so rapid. So I think we're always dealing with uncharted waters. I don't think there's one issue which one mountain left to climb and then everything will be okay. Let me speak for a moment about what I've been involved in, which is creating women halachic experts in the area of Tarat HaMishpacha and women's health. We now have 80-plus Yoatzot Halacha, and by this, the end of this coming summer, we're going to have 100. Most of them are in Israel, but we also have a Yoatzot Halacha in London, and we have quite a number in North America. They're providing a friendly address. They're putting a friendly face, in my opinion, on Orthodoxy, on observant Judaism, so that women feel very comfortable going to them. And we've had over 250,000 questions asked to Yoatzot Halacha in little more than a decade. I think that this is a quantum leap in Jewish life, where you start out by giving women the tools to study Gemara. The next is you give women the tools to study higher halacha. And then we began qualifying women with practical tools, and women are voting with their feet or with their fingers as they phone Yoatzot Halacha, or as they consult with them within communities. So I think that this is a model for what I think needs to be done, that on the one hand, women's needs must be addressed. Women are capable, they will not be held back, and their needs need to be addressed in a creative and effective fashion. On the other hand, this all needs to be done not just within the framework of halacha, that's aleph bet, that's the given, but my own very strong feeling is that when you create changes, you don't want to create discord. You want as much as possible to build a consensus. I think leadership is about building a new consensus and taking people along with you. So I don't think that this is the end of the road as far as developments within Jewish life. We'll be seeing Jewish life for men and for women changing as it always has. It's different now than it was 50 years ago. It'll be different now in 50 years from now than it is today. But I think responsible change involves three principles. One is response to real needs. The second is doing this in a fashion which conforms totally to halacha, and the third is, as much as possible, reducing discord and building a new consensus. So I'm not mapping out for you all of the changes that I think need to take place, in part because of a very strong feeling that I have that changes need to be taking place in small steps, far from the spotlights, and as much as possible with the building of a consensus, enabling those changes to take place.
What you're saying is, of course, very logical, makes a lot of sense, and I think that's probably the way to do it, small steps at a time. But let's get back to the second question about the more Haredi world. I mean, are they dealing with this issue, or are they ignoring it?
To the best of my knowledge, it isn't really an issue within the Haredi world. I think roles are clearly defined there, And I think the Haredi world has been more impervious to the kinds of changes that are taking place in larger society. Ultimately, it affects Haredi society, but it usually does so with a time gap of maybe 20, 30 years. You can see this in terms of changes in dress, changes in habits. When I moved to Israel 40-something years ago, it still wasn't acceptable for a Haredi woman to drive a car. That's really fallen by the wayside. So I think you will see changes in Haredi society, but I expect them to be much more subtle.
Mm-hmm. Slowly and subtle. And when you look at the big picture, okay, and you say to yourself, there's always a slippery slope. So what's a slippery slope here? Is there one? Maybe there's not a slippery slope.
Well, you said there's a slippery slope.
Okay.
I didn't say there's a slippery slope.
Well, that's why I said maybe there's not. I said maybe there's not, okay?
Listen, life is a dangerous place. The best assurance against making a mistake is don't get out of bed in the morning. There are always changes that are going to take place. I think you need to have certain safeguards. And one safeguard is that you don't change the feel of melody of Jewish life too quickly. And I think this is especially the case in synagogue decorum. That needs to feel good. There needs to be continuity. There need to be changes. Women's needs need to be taken into account. But I think the safeguard is moving within a consensus. I'm changing the consensus. I'm not staying in the present consensus. But I think the safeguard against a slippery slope is first and foremost education. I think the more you have people who are halachically knowledgeable, the less changes are going to be a slippery slope downhill, the less there is going to be a departing from halacha. So you make changes, but the changes are within halacha. I think that's the biggest safeguard. And as I said, we have to be aware that there are a lot of Jews in this world, thank God, and that we want observant Judaism to be a comfortable place for all. That means that women should not be checking out because they find the way the community relates to themselves as antiquated or inappropriate. And on the other hand, there needs to be a sense of continuity. You're striking a balance, and I think it can be done.
Okay, well, look, let's hope that it is done, because it's going to be important. And I think this could be one of the issues that, you know, where there is a great divide. You know, when you look at the Orthodox community, I'm saying it's possible, this could be one of those major issues where there is a major divide between segments of the Orthodox community.
I don't want to underplay that. Of course, women's issues is potentially divisive. I think because it's divisive, it's potentially divisive, it deserves our attention, and we need to back leaders who are making those changes in the right way. I think if we pretend for a moment that all we need to do is maintain the status quo, we're going to find that people are checking out of orthodoxy. We're going to find that women don't feel comfortable. I think there are some changes which are more subtle, which are less subtle. I was in a shul recently with this beautiful mechitza, and Eshet Chayil was written on the mechitza. The lettering was just magnificent. The only problem is it wasn't readable from the women's side. It was readable from the men's side. Someone didn't stop to think that, wait, there are women davening in this shul. That awareness that there are women davening in the shul needs to permeate our sensibility as a community. What that means is the Ezrat Nashim needs to be lovely. What that means is that religious symbols need to be in the Ezrat Nashim. When was the last time you were in a shul that had a board saying Mashiv HaRuach U'Morit HaGeshem in the women's part of the shul, or Parshat HaShavua in the women's part of the shul. It's or Modim D'Rabbanan in the women's part of the shul. You just don't have it. It's a statement of our having different expectations from the women and from the men. And today, we have a generation of young women who are being educated primarily in Israel. They go to good high schools in the United States. They come to Israel for a year or two, and they go back and they continue learning. They may continue learning Daf Yomi. They may be having a chavruta in Ramban. But these people who are educated in Israel are coming back to the United States infused with a sense of ownership over their Judaism. So when it comes to when it comes to their place in the synagogue, they're of course deeply sensitive. You can relate to this in two ways. You can just ignore it, and then you'll find that what you're doing, what we're doing, is pushing away the younger generation. Or we can find ways within halacha which are more inclusive, which are more participatory. And I've given you a small example when I'm talking about synagogue aesthetics. But synagogue architecture and aesthetics are a reflection of much larger attitude towards women's participation in the synagogue and in Jewish life. Is there child care in the synagogue? Is the synagogue putting a priority on women? Or is the synagogue saying something like, well, of course we have to have a rabbi, we have to have a youth director, but we don't have to have a yoetz et halacha. We would like to, but we don't have the budget for it. Well, let's figure out what are our priorities. Are women in our priorities? If they are, then we need to make the statement exactly as we would about a youth director. We must have the youth director, and we have to raise the funds for it. We must have a yoetz et halacha. We have to raise the funds for it.
No, I mean, I think you're right. But you say, well, one thing you could do, you know, one aspect is you could ignore it, which is wrong, or you could relate to it and deal with it. But you also could relate to it too quickly and deal with it too quickly. I think some of the people that I find who look at this, the whole issue, say to me, maybe we're just doing it too quickly. And you're really saying, which I think is correct, that over time, done correctly, slowly, la'at, and done with consensus, it'll work. But it doesn't have to be today. Maybe it'll be tomorrow, but that's also better.
But I think there are other things that we can do today that no one would object to ideologically. If you're speaking about providing childcare in shul so that mothers can attend davening, there's no ideological opposition to this. If you're speaking about looking at the shul and saying, what does it feel like to be a woman in this shul, and is there possibly a different placement of the mechitza that would make davening by women a more spiritually meaningful experience. There's no ideological objection to these things. It's just the women's issues have not been on the agenda.
Right. No. I think you're right, and I think it's very, very interesting. And so we're looking forward to your coming to New York for our convention, and I'm sure this is going to be discussed. And thank you so much for coming on the program. We really appreciate it, Rabbanit Henkin, the founder and dean of Nishma. Thank you, and have a wonderful, wonderful day.
Thank you, and I thank the OU for giving me the opportunity to come to the convention and to be a part of a very important discussion of a very important issue for the Jewish future. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.